Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the AI Training Podcast. I am very excited about the show today. I have an incredible guest, Patty Vaxman, head of Sheba Consulting, a fractional leadership services practice out of New Jersey. Sheba has been doing this for over 30 years, including roles in the C-suite, helping startups and established companies. She's just incredible. I'm so excited to have her on the show. I could go on and on about her background and history, but I am going to let the interview do the heavy lifting here. So thank you and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. Appreciate it.
This is going to be a lot of fun. I know that we connected recently through a mutual friend, and your experience in fractional leadership and AI, I've got so many questions. But maybe to start, for those who don't know, what is fractional leadership?
Fractional leadership is really the practice of bringing in an experienced C-level executive on a part-time basis, basically to outsource that role. But it's not traditional outsourcing because that person is usually 100% involved in the business. They are just like any other C-suite executive, except they're doing this part-time and they're usually holding several clients. So our fractional leaders usually have a load between 3 and 5 clients, depending on the level of engagement. And it's a very cost-effective model. We do COO, CHRO, and CTO. And it's a very cost-effective model because you get a lot of experience, especially that comes with the fractional model, because fractionals see a lot of businesses rather than 1 or 2 or 3 that normal people in their career see. And you get someone with many years of experience, so you don't have to pay what you would otherwise an executive at the same rate would cost you, I don't know, anywhere from $350,000 to $600,000 a year or something ridiculous like that.
So, amazing. That's awesome. So I know you have a ton of experience, and I'm curious, what industries do you tend to gravitate towards?
We started out with the tech industry because both my partner and I come from the tech industry. Before we started the company, we were in the tech industry for couple of decades. I'm aging myself here. And we expanded to several other industries. We currently work, obviously, on tech and anything tech, software, I think technology, information security. We also work with a lot of business services companies, agencies, marketing agencies, market research agencies, software development agencies, anything that's like a business service. We work with medical practice groups. That's been a niche that we've been in for the past, since 2019. So it's going on 5 years. That have their unique challenges. And we also work with media and publishing and some different types of nonprofits, just because of my kind of personal abilities to take up causes and run with them.
Very cool. And through this kind of, it sounds like quite a large mix of industries that you work with. What tend to be the commonalities between all these companies?
Most of them are in some state of transition. So they are either growing or they have grown significantly. They have some kind of a challenge. They need help with something. Some of them are coming to us because they've grown too fast and they really can't handle it and everything's falling apart. So unfortunately, That's like the majority of them that are coming to us when things are falling apart and they're drowning. And a small minority, the smart minority, is coming to us before that happens, when they know that there's a change that needs to happen, when they're looking to expand, when they're looking to grow, when they feel that some area of the business isn't functioning correctly, they feel that things are not being very efficient, or that they can't have, you know, they don't have enough control over what's happening in the business. And many business owners, especially in a lot of the industries that I mentioned, are, their talents are in their industry, right? They know how to be a doctor. They know how to be a lawyer. They know how to be a marketing person. They don't necessarily know or want to know or care to deal with all the operations and the behind the scenes of running business. And they're doing it because they don't have a choice and it's taking up too much of their time. And they're looking for someone they can really trust to do that and be able to give that away and trust someone else. And that's us.
Got it. And as it relates to operations, obviously over the last year, especially, AI has really taken hold of operations. What are some of the challenges that have come up with your clients and leveraging this technology?
Since November 2022, we're a very technological team in general. We're all geek, to put it plainly. So we love new technology. Whenever something new comes up, we jump in and try to figure it out. And that's what happened in November 2022, when ChatGPT came out, like there were earlier versions, but they were not great. Like we've been experimenting with AI tools a lot before November 2022, and they were lame. They just weren't very good. So we didn't find anything that we could really do with them. And then November 2022, the first kind of public version of ChatGPT came out. We were on the waiting list for a long time. We got in. We got super excited about what this thing can do and started reverse engineering it and figuring out what it can and cannot do. And immediately it was glaringly apparent that this tool can make a huge difference for businesses. And since then, we've gotten a lot of expertise in AI. And what I've learned is that people don't fully understand the potential of what it can do for their businesses. Most people that even if they know about it, which to me is very surprising that so many business owners and business leaders don't even know. They may know it exists, but they've never even tried it. They don't think it has anything to do with them, or they're afraid of it, or they just think about it as an afterthought. But those who do know about it mainly use it for writing, for marketing, for writing content. And I think that's probably about 30% of what we do with it, maybe. We do a lot of different things with it that are not content creation. And over the past year, and it'll be a year and a half shortly, we've been working with a lot of our clients who have also been interested in jumping on this moving train. And part of it was trying to figure out how to implement AI in those businesses so that it will really help us with things that we used to do before. So we've always done business process implementation, improving business process and automation and efficiency and all of that. And then comes AI and we're like constantly thinking of ways to use those tools to take that step further, two steps further or 10 steps further. And I can give you some examples if that's something you're interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to ask if 30% is only, and I think most people think of tools like ChatGPT as content creation, right? But it sounds like the bulk of what you're helping companies with is other ways to use AI. Can you give us a couple examples?
I think the number one example and the biggest one is analysis, just analysis and analyzing data, all kinds of data, numbers and different data. Think about it as the ability to take a bunch of databases with different data in them, finding commonalities and be able to extract insights from that data that would have taken a human many hours, many days, many weeks, many months to even be able to process all that data. One example that we've done sometime last year, middle of last year, is that we worked with a large medical practice group and they have several offices. We've used AI to analyze patient data. So we did a few stages, we stripped the data off of anything identifying for HIPAA compliance purposes. And we basically used it as statistical data. We moved it to a different database and analyzed patient data to uncover all kinds of insight about their patient behaviors, about referrals, about their marketing operations, about what kind of procedures patients tend to come in and do, what procedures are more profitable. Lots and lots of both financial and patient behavior data. At the end of the day, we improved this group's bottom line by 20% just by doing that. We also helped identify operational gaps that they've had and close them. We improved the patient journey in general by implementing a lot of processes. And we changed all of the marketing practices based on the insights that we've gained by implementing AI.
Amazing.
That's one example.
Now, are you using tools to do this type of thing outside of ChatGPT?
Yes.
I know ChatGPT has capabilities like that. Typically, it needs to be API driven.
Yes.
Are there any tools you can share that people should investigate for analysis?
So we mostly use the ChatGPT API, but we also use other tools. And I think one of the advantages that we have that I've seen that makes us unique is that the fact that we are experts in business process and business process automation, implementation, improvement, that has nothing to do with AI, right? We also have technical expertise and the ability to implement API and backend and write code to do all kinds of things. And the combination of these two things is pretty unique to the fact that, yes, we know the tool, we know the ability, and we know the limitations of the tools. we know how to design a business process that will find an advantage and be able to take advantage of the tools, but also how to implement those things in the back end in the way that will take full advantage of the tool. And I'll give you an example. In the example that we spoke about now, this medical group was using an EMR, an electronic medical record system, that was not meant for any analysis, for anything, any numbers, any BI whatsoever. They're meant to manage patient records. And so at the end of the day, all of these systems are writing their data into database. So we had to break into the database in a way, find the database, take the data out of that database, strip it out of personal identifiable information, put it in a different database, and then write code that would allow ChatGPT API to access that database so that we can run certain queries on it. That's an example of, it's a multi-step solution, but at the end of the day, we created a dashboard for the practice that they could literally ask questions. They could ask questions of ChatGPT on that data. And we created a dashboard with graphs and with whatever different things, but that's an example. So there are many tools involved. It's not just AI tools. And I'll give you another example. We work with a major content publisher and we've helped them transform their process by integrating both like a graphic AI, Midjourney, in this particular example, as well as ChatGPT and some other AI tools. There are tools that are based on ChatGPT, but are doing the prompt engineering in a different way that already exist, like Koala Writer. There are different tools, Claude, which is a different ChatGPT, it's a different LLM that is doing things in a bit of a different way and have different capabilities. And so we've been playing with the different tools. Obviously, there's Microsoft Copilot, which again is based on OpenAI ChatGPT engine, but is doing things a little bit differently. There are a lot of graphic tools, Adobe Firefly and some other tools that we have created into that process and transformed that process from a company that was basically creating all the content manually. Now there's a lot less people. The content is created, is, we call it AI augmented. It's created by AI that's being instructed by people. But we get a lot of, again, a lot of insights from the way that the content is created. That's another example. And there could be many tools.
Interesting. The from a client-facing experience, as great as ChatGPT is, when people are accessing the data, you talked a bit about that conversational nature. Have you set your clients up? I think you alluded to that a little bit, of having them talk to the data or have it ask questions to get what they want. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So I think that's probably the superpower, the secret sauce of using ChatGPT accurately, is knowing what it's capable of and really knowing the limitations of it. And especially in the last few months with the ability to create standalone GPTs and now with their team version that allows you to use data that's private to you and is not used to train their models, those are big advancements that we're taking advantage of. And we do several things. One, we create those prompts behind the scenes so that you don't do the conversational, right? The dashboards that we created are based on prompts that are happening behind the scenes. They're pulling the data out. And it's a good thing and a bad thing, because once in a while, OpenAI updates the model every couple of weeks, and sometimes they break it. And so when they break it, they sometimes make it stupid. And it usually takes them a few days to figure that out and make it smarter again. But then you have sometimes a week where, okay, nothing worked the way it's supposed to work. You've got to re-engineer all the prompts. And that happens. That happened in the last 6 months twice, that it really broke our processes. And it's part of the risk that you have to take when you're automating and you're implementing these things into code, is that you're going to have to fix it when it breaks. And the second thing is that we need to experiment before we create a solution. We take a while experimenting with what kind of prompts, what exact, not just the prompts, it's all prompts, but it's really what kind of background you need to provide and teach the model before you even start asking the questions. And I think that's something that a lot of people fail to do. And I think that's probably the biggest tip I can give people, is don't just say, I need to write a letter, write this for me, do this for me. you got to give a background. You got to really have a conversation and you got to build in stages on top of the background that you're giving it. So we are feeding it very often with a lot of background information. For example, this medical practice, right? We are, okay, you are a business intelligence analyst in a medical practice group. This is what the medical practice group does. This is the background of the group. This is how long they've existed. This is how many patients they have. This is where they operate in the country. Lots and lots of information about. And this is what we're trying to get out of it. These are the goals. What are the goals of this whole thing that we're doing, right? We're trying to gain insights about patient behaviors. And then another thing that I would recommend that people do is you ask ChatGPT to give you advice on what questions to ask, because those are some of the things that help it almost like process the information that you've given it, right? Now that I've given you all of this background information about this medical practice, tell me, how would I approach trying to get this information out of this database of data? What would you ask? What else do you need from me so that you can help me analyze this data? And then you get the answers. And that helps you engineer the prompt. And then after you do all this, then you can create. And now again, like the token size has been increased. So now we can transmit more instructions and not a one stage process. It's not like you push a button and it spits out the information. It's a little bit like teaching a child how to ride a bike. They fall, they get up again and they get up again and again until they get it. And when they get it, it's like this, right? They get it and it's, oh, I get it. It's like the light turned on. So, and this is the process that I see when I work with business owners and try to teach them how to do. This is the piece that they're missing. And even though even my kids are using ChatGPT, but making it second nature to me now, this is the first thing I go to. I have a question. I'm thinking about something. I'm contemplating something, anything. It's the first thing I go to. The first thing I do.
I love that. The idea of making businesses smarter using AI and helping with the decision-making process and analyzing data to make better decisions. I jokingly say I couldn't be running a business the way I am now a year ago because so much has changed. And I'm curious what, for those that may already be running a business successfully for years and are hesitant to get started, what recommendations do you have?
I'll tell you what. First of all, understanding that AI is not the goal. It's a tool. It's a means to an end, right? That's not, people come to me, I want to implement AI. And I'm like, why? I don't know why. Mm-hmm. So figure out the why first. You got to define your business objective to understand that in order to optimize the business process, and certainly in order to use AI as one of the tools to optimize that business process, you need to understand what your goals are. What is it that you're trying to achieve? And that's the number one thing. People kind of skip that. They go straight into, okay, let's implement AI. Implement AI in what? AI is a lot of things. AI is like saying, oh, let's use the cloud. Okay. Let's use the cloud for what? Let's implement AI for what? Then understand that it can be a tool to augment your human operations and not replace them. Like people are looking for magic solutions. It's not magic. It's really important to work with experts that will guide you through the whole process of understanding your need, understanding the abilities of the tools and also their limitations, because they do have limitations from many different aspects, whether it's security, whether it's like a lot of different things that you need to be aware of. And then figure out a process that really aligns both the business needs and the technology that's necessary to the strategy of your business. And like I said, it's not a goal by itself. And understanding the advantages and the limitations is very important in this case.
Got it. What have been some of the more interesting goals people have had that have come to you with things that they've been trying to achieve in their business?
I had a prospect that was working with us last year, and they do a lot of financial data analysis, and they're trying to implement AI in that process so that they have less people creating those reports. That's one example. That's a very, and not a simple goal to achieve, but that's a very correct, accurate goal that AI can certainly achieve. But they were concerned at the time about privacy and like security, data security of the information that they're evaluating. And so at the time, we couldn't really give them a good enough answer because the tools really didn't have it. Yeah, there's ChatGPT Enterprise. It's almost impossible to get a seat on. And now there's the team version that is possible to get a seat on pretty easily. And so that's something that can be done now that we couldn't do 4 or 5 months ago. Right. So that's an example. Most of our clients, most of them don't really have the right goal in mind when they start thinking about this. It's us that are implanting that idea in their head. And with the exception, I would say, of one client that's been really spearheading this whole AI thing, and she and I have been geeking out over AI for the past year and a half in ridiculous ways, including in the middle of the night, I found out that I can do this and this and this. Oh, check this out. Look at this screenshot. And yeah, really geeking out. And in a way, I feel like working with ChatGPT is like having a positive version of the Borg at the edge of your fingertips, right? You have this collective, huge mind of millions and millions of people and millions of fields. And all you have to do is know how to ask the questions. And I think in our business, knowing how to ask the questions is our sort of superpower in the very beginning. That's what we do really well. And so it just extends into AI, and that's why we've been successful with it.
I think it lends itself to the years of experience you have in process automation and really understanding BI systems, because without having the right questions, you can be misguided. What makes a good business goal when it comes to AI?
I don't know that there's a good business goal when it comes to AI. I think your regular business goals that your day-to-day...
Those are enough.
That's what I'm saying. Like your usual day-to-day business goal, most of them can be improved or made more efficient with AI. Anything from, okay, marketing. And I'll give you an example from our own world. We're operations and HR technology people, and we're not very good in sales and marketing. So trying to figure out a way to grow is that we're analyzing our funnel and trying to understand what works better, what doesn't work, why it doesn't work. One of the ideas that came up is let's send a survey to people that we've sent proposals to that have not signed up with us. And then I'm like, yeah, marketing surveys are a serious business. This is not our area of expertise. Let's figure out how to design a marketing survey that will really give us what we want to hear. And how do we do that? We asked ChatGPT. So the goal is the same goal. It had nothing to do with AI, but the implementation of the goal had everything to do with AI because ChatGPT gave us a lot of ideas and a lot of things that we haven't even thought about on how to phrase the question so it is really giving us what we want. There are multiple ways to phrase the question. You're not always going to answer what you actually want to know. And so that's one example. Another example is that we're building together with a client, a nonprofit association for web publishers that will help represent web publishers, you know, small publishers and their interest in with big tech and with different things. And we are working on the bylaws of the organization. And you have to think about all the things that could go wrong, right? When you put together a board, all the things that could go wrong, all the things that you need to think about. And ChatGPT is a perfect companion for that because you ask, tell me all the things that could go wrong when I'm hiring board members. Help me put together a conflict of interest policy. What should they be allowed to do and what should they not be allowed to do? And again, it doesn't do the work for you, but it gives you a ton of ideas and a ton of information that you otherwise would have taken hours and hours to research.
Got it. This is great. I'm really enjoying this conversation.
Like me.
Yeah, total geek. And that whole thing you were talking about with like your little friend group there where you're constantly like messaging people with, have you seen this? Have you checked this out? I have the same thing. When it comes to the way that you're working with clients now, have you found that AI is creating more work in certain cases when it comes to either reviewing things or, I guess what I'm asking, is it always a time savings or where do people need to be careful with AI and creating unnecessary work?
certainly sometimes it's not worth it, right? Because of what I said before, that it's not a magic solution. You go in, you ask a question, you get the answer. It takes work. It takes time. My interactions with ChatGPT, even about smaller things, they take a while. They take a long time. Sometimes it's not worth it. I can write the email myself. I can write the document myself. Sometimes I don't need ChatGPT to do it, because it will take me more time to teach it everything that I have in my head that it needs to know to have perspective in order to create what I needed to create. So yes, definitely sometimes it's not worth it. In other cases, I would say that the process itself of figuring it out and implementing it and creating the processes and creating the prompt and writing the code and all of that takes time. That's, again, not a magic solution. And we'd always have to weigh whether it's worth it. And in many cases, not just whether it's worth it, but also what's the lifespan of the solution? Because you put in all this in a solution, you're automating, you're creating code, and then they make a change to the model and they break it, and then you have to maintain it. So sometimes it's definitely worth it because the amount of time that it saves is very significant and the amount of money that it saves is significant, or when it does things that a human simply can't do, and that's common. But sometimes it's just really not worth it. And we decide to not implement like a software solution, but we decide to teach people how to use it manually because the constant changes make it so that it doesn't make sense. So it really depends on what it is you're trying to do. And I tell you that in the case of this publisher I was talking about, we decided to not automate the image creation with Midjourney. We decided to keep those manual, because the work that it takes to automate them and the changes to the model and to the language constantly, they're too rapid, they're too quick. And so it doesn't make any sense to sit there for a month and write a piece of software that every time they're going to release a new version, it's going to be obsolete.
Completely agree with you in that there are certain cases where it doesn't make sense and you get there through experience. I remember when I was running a PR firm, we got into the habit of doing these custom proposals. But each time you do something long, you got to read through the whole thing, right? You learn that after you realize, why is this taking longer than it used to?
Yep.
Right? There's a reason templates exist. They're designed to save us time. There are a couple things I want to touch on. One is the future. What, in your mind, is the low-hanging fruit for solutions around AI? I guess those are two questions. Let's talk about the low-hanging fruit first, and then we can touch on the future.
I think the real dramatic change is going to come when ChatGPT solutions can be not really self-hosted, because you can't really self-host this computing power, but really be segregated and completely private from the rest of the world. That hasn't happened yet. And although your data isn't being used to train the model, still not 100% your data. And I think that's still a major limitation of all of those LLMs, is that you don't have a way to really make it completely yours in a legal perspective. So I think that's one thing that's really going to make a huge change is when that happens. And I hope that happens this year, because the whole thing's going to blow up when that happens, when you can really control that your data remains yours and remains completely confidential. And then you can expose the model to things like patient data, and you didn't have to do all the things that we did and move it from one database to another, like all of that, in order to protect confidentiality. The other thing is make it in a way that you can really train kind of the model on your environment in a way that you don't have to keep repeating yourself. They did that with the GPTs, but it's very small. The amount of information it retains is very small. It's not enough. And so when I'm actually able to host an LLM model on my own environment, cloud environment, obviously, and train it on my entire library of data, whatever it is, where that data is going to be retained and it's going to be able to pull it and it will have the computing ability to really scan it in real time all the time, I think that's going to be a huge major change to the whole world. But I think that's going to take some time just because of hardware limitations.
Very interesting. There was a tool that I came across recently. I haven't explored it too much. Julius AI, all about data and analysis, something that I definitely would love to dig into. I'm not sure. you mentioned you haven't something for us both to dig into after this, and maybe on our next interview we'll be able to chat a bit more about that one. But there's always tools coming out. How do you and your team keep up? I know it's challenging. I often love doing podcasts where I get from the horse's mouth, so to speak, of, oh, there's, you got to try this or check this out. But I know being on LinkedIn, there's 50 prompts for this and 100 prompts for that and 10,000. I just need to relax a little bit and have some perspective. How do you navigate the influx of new?
Yeah. So first of all, we have a group within our company that is just informing everybody on new tools that they've come across, whether it's on LinkedIn, whether it's heard it on the radio, whether it's in a podcast, whether it's whatever. So we suggest them, then we take a look at them really quickly to see what they're supposed to do. And we decide whether it's worth testing them out or not based on whether we think it's going to be relevant to our business model. There are certain kind of buckets of tools that we have been testing extensively. I'll give you an example. Note takers for Zoom, for Google Meet, for whatever. I think we're using 4 different ones, and they all have their advantages and disadvantages, and we are literally using all of them.
I laugh now because often it seems like at meetings we're outnumbered by note takers, right? They all just flood in, and our screens are so small because it's full of note takers. But what are the different note takers that you're experimenting, testing?
Recently, Zoom added their own AI summary feature and the bot, I forgot what it's called, that you can ask questions during a call. And that thing's a game changer. Game changer. Turn it on, because if you doze off for a second and your mind wanders and somebody says your name, you're like, oh, what did they just say? That's super cool. Don't tell anybody I said that.
I won't.
In addition to that, we are using 2 tools. One is called Fathom AI and the other one is called Read AI. They just have different strength in really pulling out insights from conversations. And I find myself using all of them, the summaries, the highlight, the action items, all of it. I'm using both of these. I'm definitely using Zoom. We are also using something called MetaView for HR and interviews, where it really does a very good job in capturing an interview, because we interview a lot. We do a lot of HR. We hire and we recruit for a lot of our clients. So we use that one. And they're all being used by different members of the team at different times. So that's note takers. We've experimented with, I don't know, hundreds. We have a Monday board on our Monday instance where with all the different tools that we've experimented with and whether people who've tried them decided that they're worth it or not worth it. Those that are worth it, we register, we try them out, we see. So we tried all kinds of tools for video production and played around with them. Obviously, all the image generation tools, logo and design tools. Every time something comes out, we try it if it makes sense for our world, our business world. And I know that a lot of our clients are using tools that are helping with troubleshooting code and writing code and documenting code and things like that. I don't write code, but so there are different tools. I think the answer to your question is that we just like it. We really do enjoy it. We've implemented on our website over the last several months, 5 or 6 different AI tools, and some of them lasted a few months and disappeared. Okay, we go on to the next one, but we like to experiment and try them out.
I think that's a great point, in that there are some people that have always had maybe an appetite for learning, and AI is just like if you like chocolate, it's the most delicious piece of chocolate that can keep going back to. And I'm not surprised that for yourself and your team that you do geek out on this stuff. And when it first came out, it's almost like you can't get enough, even now, because it's constantly, I don't think there's ever been something that you keep needing to refresh what you know or rethink things. And there's probably, as far as safe bets, some companies that I think, as far as, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but ChatGPT is a good one to learn about, as it's probably not going away.
Absolutely. Right? That's not going anywhere.
Are there any others that you would say are good places to invest time that you're predicting are going to still be around?
I think understanding the buckets of the different tools, like the LLMs, the image generations, the audio and video generation, like understanding the tools and who the major players are is the first kind of step, because you want to know who the major players are on a financial basis as well. Who's backing who? Microsoft is backing OpenAI. Like, you've got to know these relationships. That's just like business curiosity. And if you're following the business world, you're going to know these things. That's one thing. And the second thing is, once you understand the bucket, keep on trying, because I'll give you an example. In the very beginning, I was like all over Bard and Bing and this and that and the other, and it was garbage. So I left it alone. But I have a calendar reminder every quarter to go back and play again with them, because maybe something changed. And I can definitely see how, for example, being able to use AI within the Google suite, which is already implemented, but it's still not entirely there. But being able to use it within my Google suite on my documents, that's going to be amazing. But right now, I still go back into ChatGPT. You know, if I had that within Google suite, I'd be a very happy camper, but it's not there yet. So reminding myself to keep trying those tools that maybe in the beginning I said, okay, it's really not there, is a good example. Anthropic Claude is a good example, because it's a very different, I know it sounds ridiculous, but it has a very different personality. And so sometimes that personality comes in handy for things where ChatGPT, you'd have to teach it to have that personality. And Claude already has that personality. And so reminding myself to go back and look again at tools that I've already decided not to go with is something that I do.
It does seem like a crazy bandwidth thing as a solo entrepreneur to try to navigate all of these different tools. And to your point, it is a great idea to revisit things. I personally haven't experimented with Claude very much, just a little bit, scratching the surface. But I keep talking to people and it comes up again and again. I think that's also a good indicator, is that if a tool keeps coming up in your ecosystem, then third time you hear it, maybe sign up for a trial or get your feet wet. But obviously ChatGPT comes up over and over, so everyone's been there. To your point about tool integration, I like Notion for organization, and I was using their Notion AI, and it's powered by ChatGPT, and I love the organization of being able to not have to copy paste. But there's a familiarity now, I think a lot of people have, with how ChatGPT works and the expected output, that keeps bringing me back at least, and makes it not like I'm ready to just implement it. I like having a history there of everything that I've been working on, although I still don't, maybe I'm missing it. I was using a browser extension that allowed me to search my threads, but having a search in ChatGPT seems like a big oversight, and maybe there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
I would also like a copy the thing at the top, not just at the bottom of the results, so that you could do it in two places. Yeah. Copying is usually something that if I'm starting it.
There's definitely some UI things that I wouldn't say that their UI is genius UI, not at all, but they've added some. What's happening is that I used to use a lot of extensions that now are built into ChatGPT, such as sharing a conversation or summarizing things like that. That I used to have 6,000 browser extensions that would do all these things. I don't need them. But those things are going to be helpful, and the ability to pin or reorder your conversations on the left would be very helpful. But I also found that in older conversations, this is also new, by the way, in older conversations, you're able to switch the model. You weren't able to do that before. That's new.
That's true.
And in older conversations, it forgot the context. So you'd have to remind it to go back to the context. So like, they're not smooth sailing yet. I'm finding little things and bugs on a daily basis. But then again, if you, again, it goes to my point about understanding the tool and the limitations and what it can and can't do. And once you're able to do that, I think that makes a big difference. We stress test every new model that comes out, every new version that comes out, we stress test. We do, whenever we go into any new LLM or even something that's built on top of the API, but has a different UI because they're doing something, we stress test it. We ask all the inappropriate questions. We try to see what it will censor, what it will not censor. We try to check whether it has accurate information. We ask for references. So there's a lot that you can and should be doing before you feel comfortable. And even then, even when you do feel comfortable, I think you have to remind yourself to check it again and again because it changes.
Good advice. We were talking about note takers earlier, and I had a conversation with someone and a note taker came up. So here's one more for your team to check out. It's called Sybil AI or S-Y-B-I-L, I believe. And it's a note taker, but its primary focus is for sales teams. So it's got one kind of mind reader type functionality where it somehow, I'm still new to it, but it's supposed to predict pain. It will auto-generate an email that's drafted, ready to go based on that. And I know it's all these micro steps, but it's really focused on the sales process with tight integrations into CRMs. And that's one to take a look at.
Cool. That's very cool.
From an organizational perspective, have you heard of TaskAid?
Yes.
This one's come up a few times. And for our listeners, always trying to give some value as it relates to tools. This one's supposed to have some incredible functionality as far as multitasking of GPTs to get things moving simultaneously, where often, I don't know about you, but sometimes you're like waiting for ChatGPT to do its thing, right?
Lately, it's been so slow. It's been driving me crazy.
Yeah. So as great as ChatGPT-4 is, sometimes the speed of ChatGPT-3.5 does what it needs to do.
Yep, that's correct.
This has been amazing. You are great. I love learning about this stuff, and I've had such a wonderful time chatting. Tell me where people can get a hold of you, your website. What's the best place to contact you?
So our website is shebaconsulting.com, S-H-E-B-A consulting.com. I am Adeev Axman on LinkedIn, and that's the only advantage of having a weird, unique, and foreign sounding name is that you Google my name, you'll find me right away. And we're everywhere. We're all over the internet. And so it's very easy to find us. And if anybody needs help with AI or otherwise business process or anything, we'd be happy to talk to them. We're very picky with the clients that we take because working with a fractional executive is really a partnership, almost like a marriage. It's a real partnership. And so some people are just not really ready for that. And people that are ready for that will reap all the benefits because it's a really great model. I've been doing this for 15 years and it's a lot of fun.
Amazing. Before we wrap up, I am curious what you're reading. Are there any books that you maybe go back to or would like to share?
I'm reading all kinds of things. I'm mostly reading magazines and whatever. A lot of my business colleagues and people that I know in business, and especially in my age group, are now writing books. So a lot of the books that I'm reading, a friend of mine wrote a book about fractional leadership. So that's a great book. His name is Ben Wolpe. And so I'm reading a lot of these kinds of books. And I'm also finding that a lot of books that are out there now about business have been written by ChatGPT, yours truly. And which means that if I know that, it means that some of them haven't been doing a very good job, because if you do a really good job with using ChatGPT, no one should be able to realize that you wrote this book with ChatGPT.
What are the flags for identifying something's ChatGPT?
I don't know if I can make a list of them, but I would start with, I hope this email finds you well. No. And there are just some telltale signs in the language that, to me, show that you haven't trained the model to be you.
And well, you know what? I write, I hope this email finds you well. So maybe I'm a little, I got that in me, well, but I do add a smiley face.
Yeah. ChatGPT got it from somewhere.
Yeah.
But there are some telltale signs that are in the language. I would, as advice to people that are using ChatGPT to write, is that read what it writes. And if there are certain words, which always are, that are not you, that you're reading this and you're like, I would never use this word, don't use the word. And so there are a lot of people that and I'll give you an example. I had an employee at a client, and she wasn't native English speaker. And she wrote me this really long email that was in absolute perfect English and grammar. And I'm like, she didn't write this. And it makes you feel like, I know this person. I've been talking to her for a long time, and I've been emailing back and forth with her for a long time. All of a sudden, this email is completely not her.
Right.
So I would tell people, like, if it doesn't sound like you, even if it sounds good or better, don't use it, because then you lose your personality. And that, for me, and personally, that's something I refuse to do. If there is a word that I would never use, then I tell ChatGPT, I have a list of words. Don't ever use these words when I'm asking you to write something as me.
That's great. I would never use them. That's great advice. If you are using it for writing, maintain your own voice so that you come through and aren't, in a way, taking people out of whatever they're there for. And if it's trying to learn something from you, they shouldn't need to ask that, okay, this isn't her or him or whatever. So
it's also about the attitude, right? Like, I admit, I used to be Israeli and I have an attitude. And if ChatGPT strips me of my attitude, you read something that's super nice and cuddly, that's just not me. So why do I want to represent myself as something that I am just not? I don't see how it's going to get me anywhere. And I also think that it's insulting to the other side that's receiving whatever it is, because it's not me. So I think maintaining your voice and learning the tool enough to know how to maintain your voice. And I will give you an example. When I write using ChatGPT, I give it feedback all the time. I would never use this word. I would never write this. This is too nice for me. This is too salesy for me. This is too touchy-feely for me. This is to give it a lot of feedback all the time.
Amazing. This has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me. And I look forward to doing this again sometime.